Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Justin and Ailish. First Wednesday in March. Happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day, Ailish.
Proud to be a woman.
Good.
That's right.
That's awesome.
Go girls, go.
You got your PWHPA shirt on?
I specifically wore this to support the squad, the ladies. I was deciding between my WNBA and my PWHPA, and the options were endless.
You could have went with the WNBA hat.
I thought that'd be a bit
maybe
much.
Maybe a little clash, okay, people are clashing gonna, a little bit.
Yeah, it's bright orange and bright blue.
The Oilers colors, though, you'd be ready to go.
Yeah, but Saturday, big game against the Oilers, so I didn't want to.
That is true.
Don't want to start. But yes, a wonderful day to celebrate all the women, not only in sport, but in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a privilege to get to come on here as one of few women in this role. And I take that very seriously, and I understand the opportunity that I have. So it's an honor, and I hope that we all get a moment to celebrate all of the fine people that work here at Sportsnet and in any industry and all of your families. So women make the world go round. Beyonce said it. Who run the world?
Girls.
That's right. Nailed it.
And women.
You know that song.
I do.
Anyway, we got some girl guests on today. Haley Salvian. She's going to join us at 8, and Monica McNutt from ESPN at 7:30.
Who we chatted with yesterday.
All good stuff to come. I hope all of our loyal listeners feel the love today. Right?
Definitely.
That's all I got.
Well, we're doing a little, instead of the A-list, I thought you'd
tee up what we're doing
for the A-list.
That's what I was actually most excited for, but we're going to draft our all-time living Canadian iconic female athletes into a starting lineup. Living being the key word because last time Justin picked Sir Frederick Banting and 7 out of his 8 roster spots are individuals that unfortunately had moved on from this life.
We were talking about legendary Canadians.
Yeah, but if we had a very...
Few have made a bigger impact.
We had a very different approach, and it was hilarious.
And Fred Banting.
So we just set some ground rules this time. Living female athletes in Canada. Let's go.
Well, mine are all active as well. How about that? Is that...
I think mine are as well, so...
Okay.
Dynamite. That's in the A-list. We'll spread the love. We'll share the love. All right, last night was... Oh, boy. Leafs win a game. That was something. I don't know if it was, I think it was just very important for a couple players individually and maybe a big momentum moment that win. Now the Maple Leafs come back home. They play the Oilers Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada. They get a couple days off. They're back in the hometown where we can finally get settled. It feels like this last 2 weeks has just been go, 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 new faces on the road, West Coast tour, injuries, lineup shuffling, I think last night couldn't have been a better finish that is going to now resonate with this team and bring you into a huge head-to-head on Saturday night. But breaking it down, there's just probably no more relief bigger than seeing Austin Matthews and Michael Bunting get on the score sheet last night in a big way. Mitch Marner with one of the most... hot goals of this season.
Hot goals.
It was a hot goal.
Okay.
William Nylander contributing, getting in action, a bunch of players having a moment. Ilya Samsonov. Where do you want to begin?
Just overall, to me, that's what a successful playoff game has to look like if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, mm-hmm. You could get depth scoring. You could get a contribution from the back end. It could come power play, whatever. But ultimately, we've all decided, I think the consensus, the unanimous sort of take on things is that the core four, or at least three from last night, three quarters of the core four in action, have to lead you there. And each of them that were available, William Nylander, Mitch Marner, then Austin Matthews, provided a moment where they gave the Maple Leafs something. And we've talked about Mitch Marner, William Nylander providing it all season long. But there was one missing, and there has been one missing piece to all that, which is that normal Austin Matthews moment, that normal Austin Matthews contribution, that thing that puts them over the top. It hasn't been there sometimes in the postseason. It has been there in other moments, but we've been missing it throughout the balance of the season just a little bit. And what did they need to put them over the hump against a playoff team in the New Jersey Devils? A Matthews goal late in the game. And that really, really meant something, because that's what you need when it matters the most. You got something from Mitch. You got something from Willie. You still needed it from Austin to win that game. In the end, they got it. And it's important, the context of Saturday night, because when were the murmurs the loudest about Austin Matthews?
When
probably after that Edmonton game.
Head-to-head, he got just steamrolled by Connor McDavid.
Yeah, where Connor McDavid, who's an alien and from a different planet and doing things that you can't really necessarily expect to be repeatable, but they're both recent Hart winners.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin Matthews beat him out for that award just last year, and they look like they're a different class of species, or at least they did in that Oilers game. Connor McDavid looked like the far, 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 far superior player, and it's on Matthews to get his game up. It's on Matthews to get his game up if the Leafs are going to have success. I wouldn't say it was a Picasso from him yesterday, but he came up with the moment that he needed, and now you need to carry that momentum over. He's got to be closer to that guy, or the one giving those contributions than the one's not, if the Maple Leafs are going to have any success, and they got it versus the Devils.
Yeah, you got to think and hope that those moments become momentum and some big ones for some people that really needed it last night. Not the best 60-minute performance from anybody. Maybe Ilya Samsonov, if he didn't get that first period under his belt like he did, the Maple Leafs outshot 15-5. That's a completely different game. He deserves a lot of credit for coming in there, holding down the fort. A scoreless score sheet going into the first intermission gives the Maple Leafs an opportunity to not be playing from behind after a really slow start to a game. They build on it. There's moments where people capitalize that really needed it, and in the end, you get a win that, as you mentioned, can be playoff-esque, where sometimes you're going to win a really messy one down the stretch where someone needs to come up big. You're not walking out of that room saying, hey, we dominated every single minute of this game, but you find a way. Like, that's what good teams can do. You are playing a really good team on the other side who have also a major boost of momentum with some of their acquisitions and the fact that they're a young, overperforming team right now that's riding this wave of, like, excitement. So much needed win for the Maple Leafs, a good way to stop the rolling stone down the hill. Say, hey, let's pick this back up and let's start going the right direction. But yeah, Samsonov, for me, started it all off. Really good to see him perform that way. You see what happened to him in warmups?
I didn't see it. I heard about it, though. I saw the tweets, at least. It's tough.
It's tough.
It's, there are, I guess, levels to how bad that can be. And if you can get through, or I mean, not get through warmups, I'm sure it interrupted warmups being hit with a shot, you know, directly on the button, we'll say. But he was able to shake off the effects of that, I guess, in the dressing room.
Just that alone.
And get back out there. It's hilarious that happens to Samsonov, because Samsonov's just so blunt and honest. And, like, he was going to give you the most blunt and honest answer possible. I don't know if we have the audio for that. I don't know if we can share the audio for that.
I don't see it in our clips.
But Samsonov is quite entertaining when something unfortunate happens to him.
A lot of sellies last night that meant something. Like, I don't know if the fans in New Jersey were really chirping last
Meaningful
night.
Meaningful sellies. I like that.
But everybody was right up on the glass when they sellied, pointing in the stands. Like,
there were meaningful sellies last night. Now that I think about it.
Each sellie meant something. It was like a screw you sellie. Like, think about everyone that scored.
I think Marner was pointing to fans.
Whoever. It meant something.
Fans. He was like, that's for you guys.
He pointed into the eyes and souls of somebody behind that glass.
Yes, he did.
Obviously, you saw the Matthews celebration.
There's a little extra on the Matthews,
a little
mustard
pizzazz,
on there.
Yeah. Yep. And then Michael Bunting, it's like elated,
like,
beyond belief.
Catharsis. The cathartic moment of the entire Maple Leaf season, it feels like.
They all needed that. Oh, and you know, Daniele just went in my ear about, remember the beer incident the last time the Leafs played the Devils, and maybe there's some lingering hatred towards fans.
Maybe.
But it was fun to watch.
Remember some of the faces that threw beer at them.
Hey, I remember that guy in that Devils jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a really great moment for a lot of these guys.
Wins feel better when, I mean, who am I to talk? But wins feel better when
you play beer league.
Exactly. And sometimes there's pressure on beer league
That's
guys
right.
that don't have that are having a bad run of play. But you would know better clearly than I do. But when there is some pressure, some spotlight, a little heat on certain people, and they deliver for the team, it's that much better, right? And that's not the case with Mitch Marner, not the case with Yarncroke and Nylander, who combined on the first goal. But there was pressure on Michael Bunting. All the noise around Michael Bunting. You don't think that's permeated the room? And that's, I think, what got to, or what at least assisted that celebration. And of course, Austin Matthews is feeling the noise too. Like, if any two players, we've discussed it, but any two players needed something, and everyone knows they needed something, Michael Bunting and Austin Matthews, they're the ones that provided the game tying, or was it go ahead? Anyway, the third and fourth goals in that game. Extraordinarily important. It's not just any player scoring those goals. It's those two. It's those two with the most pressure, the most on their shoulders in that moment, delivering the victory. It means a little bit more, at least I think.
Only would have been better if Morgan Riley got a goal. Can you imagine that?
But even just a nice, quiet Morgan Riley game, I think you'll take, won't you?
Yeah. Here, actually, we have a clip post-game, Marner talking about that goal celebration of his. We got that here.
I have no idea. I'm an idiot when I celebrate, to be honest. But, you know, I don't know. Just had it's a lot of fun out there playing hockey and, you know, trying to help your team do something special. So saw a couple of Toronto fans behind the glass there. They were all fired up and waving to me. So, I don't know. I guess I just kind of gave it back a little bit.
I'm an idiot when I celebrate.
Were you an idiot when you celebrated goals?
No, I honestly would just be like, oh, my God, and put my hands up. Like, I scored. I don't think
like a surprising moment every time.
In my history of scoring goals, I don't think I ever actually like got a celly in. You know what I mean? Where I did like a boom fist pump or
even
like
I got a couple
the bow and arrow.
In.
I was just swarmed by my teammates, just love and hugs, and usually they're just massive goals. So everybody wanted to just dogpile me. Now I don't think I can remember a moment where I
thought you had breakaway speed. You can't break away from the pack and do your own thing.
The worst thing is when somebody scores and you're like chasing them to go sell it. You're like, stop moving. Like they're like headed to center ice to sweep their hand. I'm like, can you stop? Because then everyone's just like kind of like following you. You know what I mean? Just stand there and let yourself be
selling. You got to play it off cool though. Like if you're too in a rush to celebrate them, you don't
look
as cool.
I'm always too excited. I tried to do the act like you've been there before, but you're just, you're fired up. Anyway, I've never sellied like that. Probably never will. We saw some new lineups. So the news before the game was that Ryan O'Reilly's underwent some surgery on his broken finger, expected to miss 4 weeks. So that, there you go. Wrap that up.
Yeah, that leaves him with about 5 or 6 games left in the regular season. If that, I think you'd be pretty happy if he played 5. Like, I feel like it would be a positive if he was able to come back and play 5. It seems like maybe that's not necessary. Yeah, you want him to be able to ramp up. You want him to see game action. You also don't want him to rush back and risk further injury. So either way, it seems like, you know, he's not going to have the, use that word again, integration process that we would prefer for a player that's going to play a major, major role. But I think maybe one of the benefits or its silver linings is just like simplifying things. Hey, you're the third line center. You're going to play with 2 checkers and you can grow into your Leaf experience that way. But he's going to have to be great immediately, even if he only gets a couple games left in the regular season, if that.
So without O'Reilly in the lineup and John Tavares, of course, who yesterday we tried to figure out investigative journalism, what was going on with good old captain.
I mean, it remains real strange, doesn't it?
It sure does. Held out of last night's game for precautionary reasons. I think we do have some clips of him speaking about, you know, trying to unpack, but not give too much insight about where he was or whatever. I don't think we really gleaned anything from it. So not even really. I don't know. We might play those, but he wasn't in the lineup. So nonetheless, where I was going with this is you come into a game against a really tough team without 2 of your centers. And this was going to be the big question mark. Like the Leafs were dogs. They found a way to win. But what'd you make of the way that they constructed this roster pending 2 of their biggest stars?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything, to use gleaned again, like I don't know if there's anything really we can take in terms of like roster construction because he is a foundational element. It's like knocking one of the pillars down on a house. Like you're going to have to rebuild in ways that, you know, are maybe not sustainable. Maybe you have to put up a temporary fixture just to hold things up. And it felt like what we saw was temporary because John Tavares is so important to this team and going to be playing a focal role. I guess my big takeaway from it is that maybe what I like and respect most about William Nylander is that the contributions just, it doesn't really matter what situation he's in. So he's playing last night with Sam Lafferty, second line center, and clearly he's not going to be a second line center moving forward for this team, but he's going to be a pretty big part of this team. And he moves up, and William Nylander just kind of shrugs his shoulders and makes something happen, right? And he uses, maybe he has great situational awareness, maybe he picks up on the traits, maybe he just is easy to blend in with. But it seems every time William Nylander is put in a position, or something happens, it's like, comes at the expense of William Nylander. Just make it happen, Willie. Just figure it out on the second and third line, whatever.
And he's quiet about it. He's like quiet, he's never about complaining.
It, and he just makes it happen.
He just works hard.
There's no excuse ever for William Nylander. He gets them going in that game. As you mentioned, they were getting kind of blitzed and run out of the building a little bit in the first period, and Ilya Samsonov stood on his head. But eventually they settled in, and eventually, and like it's been many, many times, William Nylander just makes do with what he has and basically gift wraps a goal for Cali Yarncroak, and they're off and running in the game. Yeah, they did fall behind again after that, but that's just what Willie does. He doesn't make excuses. He contributes no matter the situation, and I think that's one of the most endearing things about him and one of the most impressive things about this next level that he's reached, whether it's just this year, last year too, maybe a little bit of the year before. William Nylander is a different player than he was 2-3 years ago, and maybe the difference is that he just makes it happen with whomever. Now, one of my big criticisms of this team last year was, hey, that second line didn't work with John Tavares. William Nylander still worked, though. Even if it wasn't like, oh, that's an obvious partnership that we want to use moving forward, William Nylander still remains somewhat productive. It seems like he has unwavering production right now, no matter where you throw him. And I think that's one of my big take-homes from last night is just Sam Lafferty, shrug your shoulders, go out and set up a goal and be a positive impact for this team.
I guess in a similar sense, Mitch Marner has been just as steady and just as...
But Mitch Marner always gets Matthews or gets Tavares.
For sure. No,
right?
He's had a easier pathway, but he also has been the guy...
He's the guy who's in charge of getting Austin Matthews
exactly.
going. Like, there's a lot of on his shoulders. But sometimes it's just like, you know what, Willie, just, you know, do us a solid here and just make it work with no one else.
Right. I guess where I was just going to go with Mitch Marner is that he's also had to elevate a lot of players, and he's done an incredible job at being a glue guy that's like, okay, I'm going to put you with the player that's now underperforming. That's Tavares. Now you're going to amplify him. Now, he's doing well. We'll set him up for success. Now you're going to go help Austin Matthews, who is also underperforming. And Mitch Marner has been a constant and a steady. And that shorthanded goal yesterday, like in just a look at the guy that is this season that he has been, just, man, that was huge. That goal, that pass. There's so many like moments that happened. Or the pass was on the Justin Hall pass to
David Camp.
Man, you're probably fired up about that one, eh?
I was. I was kind of like, was that a bit lucky? Was that like just throwing it into
space? I wanted to ask you about that. Like, he's basically skating in the corner, looking the complete different direction.
I wanted to ask you because, like, sometimes you just make the play that makes the most sense, and you look like a moron. Like,
that was it.
In basketball sometimes. There's a guy supposed to be in the corner, and you don't even, like, really look because you're just expecting someone to be there. They lose their spot, and you just threw it away. Like, David Camp, I think, kind of skated himself out of it and just threw a hard pass, an intentful pass, into an area where a player should be.
And it looked dynamite.
And Michael Bunting was right there. It looked amazing, but it was like, that was almost too good for it to be completely on David Camp.
I'll give him...
Like, no eyes on
the
back of the head.
Yeah, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I do think there's a lot of, some luck involved in that everybody's... It went through everybody's stick, and, you know, everyone was just kind of like watching it zip through them onto the perfect stick of Michael Bunting.
The
it
same
was
thing
wide
would
open.
Happen with Nylander's pass, but I feel like that was definitely you're picking someone out and putting it into the back of the net.
But you're right about sometimes you just make the smart play. Like, what other options? He could have went into the corner, did a little button hook, went up the boards, headed to the slot. I mean, headed to the point. Like, there's a couple options he could have done. But, man, did he ever choose right if he was just contemplating what to do? But at that point...
Sometimes just a calculated gamble.
And at that point, get the puck on net, because he could have hit off a skate and went towards the crease. So it worked out. It looked absolute fire.
And that's, like, let's say Bunting wasn't there. It was a gamble. It goes back the other way, and you're like, dude, why wouldn't you just get that on net? You're in a scoring position.
In the moment,
it works out,
better.
And it couldn't have been better. Yeah.
There's some nice
goals. It's
the
best play of David Camp's entire season.
Yeah, you're probably going to watch that one on repeat, eh?
Of course.
Okay, so good to see Bunting get on the score sheet, too. Not sure what we're going to expect from Leafs lines on Saturday night. Some time for everyone to heal up a bit. looks like John Tavares should be back in the lineup. We actually do have that clip that he spoke about yesterday.
Yeah, I think we should talk about it.
Yeah, okay, so here's JT, an update on his health from himself.
Obviously, you know, physical game the other night for myself, and, you know, felt good, obviously completing the game and you know, rest of the evening, but just woke up just feeling a little tired and, you know, just a little bit not like myself, but obviously a difficult circumstances through the whole week with, you know, four games, the amount of travel, then, you know, the long travel day through the time change. So, you know, as, you know, as routine, you know, staff following up with me throughout the day and just kind of monitoring things. And so just kind of had a sense where I was at, and then woke up yesterday feeling great, had a great sleep, kind of really back to normal, and same here today. So, you know, and just trying to determine a lot of different moving parts and kind of what's going on. And sometimes you need time to kind of figure that out. And, you know, medical staff. And I think as we talked through things, felt it was best just to be precautionary.
What? He said a lot of things, and I don't think I understood one of them.
He said a lot without saying anything at all.
That's me when I wrote an essay in college.
Yes,
in summation, exactly, in conclusion, on further acknowledgement, like, you're saying words to say, I don't know what just happened.
And John Tavares can do that from time to time.
The answer for what is health? Did you get a real answer from that?
He wasn't feeling right, and they made a precautionary move.
But then he said in the morning he felt amazing.
Exactly. It was like, oh, you just needed a good night's sleep? Like, I'm
sure,
feeling,
I know
feel
that,
that
feeling,
every
buddy.
Other day.
Tonight. Or Thursday night when there's no sports on, I'm coming Friday morning fired up. Put me in, coach.
Exactly. This is just like first world problems. You get the day off, you don't feel good the day before. But that, it feels like, I don't know.
Just say we needed a night off, man.
But they won't. Yeah. I mean, you could say that, but it's like they're so worried about the messaging, right?
That looked worse.
Because it wasn't concussion. Okay, so maybe it was a concussion thing, but they let him back in the game.
So that's the thing. You can't,
and they're like,
it can't
oh,
be that.
Well, we don't admit that we made a mistake.
Look,
on Saturday night.
Look, that's sports science. That's trouble for the rest of your career.
Exactly.
You can't mention that.
You don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but you also don't want to say, hey, we're healthy scratching, or you don't want to say, hey, we're load managing, because then everyone starts talking about John Tavares.
Just say that.
So it seems like they just don't want to point to what the actual issue was. But it seems like they jumped the gun on everything because he was out there in extra work at the end of practice, felt great the next day. It seems like
a
whole lot of nothing, but it maybe seems like they're trying to disguise something or dress something up. Like they made a decision,
like, I feel
whether
like,
it's load management or whether it's like, hey, you haven't been playing well. Maybe we should sit down for a week.
I feel like Inspector Gadget trying to figure this out. Like, just tell me what's wrong and we'll move on. Now it's become Kipper and Bourne and us on the scoop, like, what's going on with John Tavares?
And we're going to be hyper...
Buddy, Saturday night, it's going to be all eyes on JT.
Hyper aware of what he's going to be doing on Saturday night.
Yes, I know that, obviously, if there's concussion-esque symptoms, I know how that can affect you. You don't play through that, but...
You can also just say, yeah, like, we addressed it in the moment, thought he was okay. There was a little bit of, there was some symptoms, if there was symptoms after, and we just wanted to monitor them. We didn't even think there were symptoms. Maybe they were half symptoms. We just wanted to be sure with Tavares after a couple hard hits. Like, it's not an indictment on your sports science staff or your program that someone didn't feel good after a hockey game. Like,
yeah.
It's not. Like, you can't control every variable. It's okay if you just wanted to be sure that because someone took some hard hits and wasn't feeling great way after the fact. It's okay.
Yes. Anyway, that's probably the last time, hopefully until Friday, that we have to address it. That's it.
Or Sheldon Keefe was just sitting him down, sitting the captain
Whatever.
Down.
I don't even care.
We'd care a lot if John Tavares was being healthy scratched.
We would certainly care.
And if we found out that they were trying to hide the fact that they healthy scratched John Tavares, I think we'd care even more.
Anyway, wasn't in the lineup last night. Didn't end up making the difference in the way the result went. Was interesting to see them losing both their second and third centermen. They found a way to do it. Something that I really liked from the way that game ended, because Maple Leafs, that's another comeback win. I think they're tied for first in the league or up in the top two in comeback wins this season. Jake McCabe looked like the value of Jake McCabe in that final minute. I think he won over a lot of Leafs fans just closing out the battles when obviously it came down to this could be a moment where the New Jersey Devils were pressing. The Maple Leafs have the opportunity to win a game after coming back. He like he was in the right lanes. He had a good clear. He stayed on a little longer. Like, I just saw a lot of value from Jake McCabe in that final minute. Someone that's going to be on this team for more than a year. It was a nice, you know what? I really liked the way that Jake McCabe played in that final minute. And that, for me, that's a playoff-esque moment where it's going to come down to the wire. You got to be gritty. You got to find a way to clear out in front of the net. A lot of pressure. Samsonov flailing, which he does sometimes. It makes you so nervous. But I like Jake McCabe closing that game out. I think he deserves a little credit.
Yeah, it looks like he shook off some of the nerves.
He's just gotten better and better.
Yeah, every game's been better. He looks very, very solid. He's quiet, which is a great thing. Like, he's not doing too much out there ever, it seems like. It just seems like he's doing his job. It seems like he's, I don't know, if you're trying to put together, hey, we want to shut down pairing, we want someone to just neutralize Brody and McCabe, you could do far worse. And I know that leaves you with decisions elsewhere, but if you're talking about just two guys you can trust to log big minutes, important situations, I don't know if Sheldon Keefe can put together a better duo. McCabe is definitely...
No, they really complement each other.
Yeah, he's passing the grade right now. He's making the grade right now for sure. And getting better every game is a good spot to be in.
So defense-wise, we like him. Justin Hall. You wrote a very polarizing Justin Hall evening.
That was a quintessential Justin Hall game, wasn't it? Like, he was on the ice, I think, for 3 of the 4 goals. I have no idea what he was doing on the Palat goal. He just stepped up, like, randomly left Palat right behind him. And you're thinking, okay, what are you doing? Like, it's, yeah, I mean, Justin Hall, it's like, it's your preconceived notion will, like, guide you through your thought process when you're watching him every game, because you either hate him or you appreciate him. And when you watch him, you'll see things you either hate or appreciate, and you'll cling to those things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a hater or someone who really, really likes Justin Hall, you're going to be able to spot something every game that you can cling to basically support your argument or
That's
support
right.
how you feel about this player. And that was... That couldn't have been more true, because after making that mistake, after being on the ice for several goals, he hits David Camp, which we talked about with the bunting goal, with one of the best stretch passes we've seen from this Leafs season. That just springs a guy who doesn't normally shake free the way he did. That's all on the pass. That's not on David Camp. And that's, you know, the key moment, if not the most important moment of that game. I guess Austin Matthews' goal, very, very important, but they needed that really,
really
bad.
You don't get there without that
in the moment. Exactly.
Sure.
You don't get there. You don't get to the point where you can take the lead without that goal happening. And it was really all about Justin Hall. Not all secondary assists are built the same way. And that one was as good as a goal, let alone a primary assist, because it wasn't happening without that stretch pass from Hall. So, like, there are people that want him to sit in the press box. There are people who want him to be one half of the shutdown pairing. You see every opinion in the world when it comes to Justin Hall, and that was the perfect game last night, because he did great things, he did awful things, and it all balances out in the end.
That is the Justin Hall experience, whether you like it or not, or whatever side of the diagram, the Venn diagram that you're in. But I think he's been mostly a pretty good bright spot compared to where we've seen him previously in his career. There was one point of the season where we had him, I think we did our first report cards, the first quarter mark. He was like MVP. Like, he was unsung hero. He was consistent. He was steady. There's a lot more question marks on the back end, I think, than Justin Hall. And yeah, last night, tough stats wise, -3. I still have more appreciation for him than maybe most, or maybe the easy to get on Twitter and fire out tweets about Justin Hall. I think he's been better than I expected this season. How about that?
Yeah, I think I'm probably in the same camp. In that, like, I acknowledge, okay, here's where I'm at with Justin Hall. I think he's the defenseman who is going to look brilliant from an analytical standpoint, underlying data, eye test, even most of the time, with a great team that is rarely pushed. Like, how many times over the course of this season be like, well, we're waiting for the Leafs to, like, play a real team? And when you're not playing a real team and you're part of a real team like Justin Hall is, and you do things most of the time, 90% of the time, you're doing the right thing and making the right play, you are going to put up numbers and analytics and baseline data that makes you look like a star. But when things get tough, he's one of the guys who has his play impacted. Mm-hmm. When things are more difficult, he makes mistakes. There are times of the season where he had a little run where he was making mistakes every night and everyone was all over him. he's made mistakes in big playoff games. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, 80%, 80 to 90% of the time, you're like, Justin Hall continues to get the job done. But when things change, his impact changes. And that's the big thing. That's why the debate is what it is, because some people are like, most underrated defenseman in the league. Look what he does all the time.
Who said that?
They're a lot,
most underrated defenseman in the league.
A lot of analytic freaks will argue that he's elite, top of the... Justin Bourne's in that. He loves Justin Hall.
He said he's one of the most underrated...
I don't want to quote him on that. I don't even think I'm paraphrasing. Okay. But he will speak up the value of Justin Hall.
And you know what? Bourne is a guy that knows, like, he's the stats guy, analytical guy. He knows him.
When he worked for the Marlins. 100%. So he knows. However, I think things change, and he's one guy who's susceptible to change. There are guys that raise their levels in tough moments. There are guys that are more susceptible to mistakes in big moments. And I feel like that's the full Justin Hall experience.
It's like when it looks bad, it looks really bad.
And
there
we saw it last night.
Yeah.
The Devils are an elite team, and he made mistakes against the elite team, and it cost them. And then he makes up for it with a single individual play that puts them back on track. That is Justin Hall. Most of the time, and especially sheltered, brilliant. When he's not sheltered, when things are tough, it gets a little shaky back there, and it's kind of anyone's guess what the result is going to be.
I feel like maybe the Morgan Rielly issue is a little bigger than the Justin Hall issue, to say that politely.
Well, if you really want to compound an issue, play them together. Then that it's complete chaos, which you're not going to do.
Oh, my
God. But they have done.
You're asking for...
Okay, where are you at with Morgan?
Well,
he was fine last night. Played with Timothy Liljegren, a new partner, last night.
It's good, and it's good to see Liljegren back in the lineup, too.
Yeah.
But I can't shake the feeling that I think a lot of our level of confidence has fallen on Morgan Rielly. But, like, he's not a guy that I'm saying I want out of the lineup. Whatsoever, I just can't find the answer for Morgan Rielly, and that's what's frustrating. Is that it shouldn't feel like we need to find the answer for a player that's going to be here long term, who is, you know, a guy that you put a lot of investment into. But this season has been a question mark around how to amplify and elevate Morgan Rielly, and they've been able to do that with other players that have had off stretches. We just talked about it. Mitch Marner was the fix. So. Is just TJ Brody is the fix for Morgan Rielly? And do we, like, just having to fix a player is a tough way, especially when it's someone that makes the long-term impact on the Maple Leafs. But I will say, last night, I was just like, okay, that was good, okay?
I think it was good.
Fine, it was good.
It was good, and what was the situation he was in? I mean, he saw quality competition, but he's playing with Timothy Liljegren. He wasn't out there in the final seconds with Jake McCabe. He was in a reduced role, right? So is it reduced?
And maybe that's the expectation we need to have instead of top line pairing.
And that's where I'm at. Like, I know it sucks that you are starting to pay this guy an exorbitant amount of money and you need him to be a number one defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But
you almost got to swallow your pride and say, maybe this is the way that we have to put him in the
exactly,
right position.
Exactly. I'm okay with a temporary fix. What I'm not okay with is doing the same thing over and over again. Daryl Sutter style, I guess, insanity, expecting a different result. And I feel like if you're throwing him out there against Jack Hughes over and over and over again, it's eventually going to burn you, because right now, for whatever reason, and maybe there's good reason, maybe he's dealing with something, who knows? But right now it's not working for Morgan Rielly the way it should for a number one defenseman. He's paid like a number one defenseman, so therefore it is an issue. However, because we know that it's not working right now, I think you have to adjust expectations. We talked about this a little bit, but I think he has to be new Rasmus Sandin. He's got to be the guy that you are trying to, A, shelter, B, weaponize. Play him against lesser competition.
Like press box?
Play him. No.
Rasmus Sandin?
No. Fifth guy on the totem pole.
Okay.
Rasmus Sandin.
Got it.
So weaponized, sheltered, fifth pairing, maybe 16, 17, 18 minutes. Not overusing Morgan Rielly, accepting that he's paid like a number one defenseman, but not playing like a number one defenseman right now. And if you do that, he doesn't have to play with Jake McCabe. He doesn't have to play with TJ Brody. He can get by playing with Luke Shen, because you're not dealing with the top competition of the other team. If you treat him like Rasmus Sandin, understanding still that, hey, he gets paid way more than Rasmus Sandin and gets paid more than any other defenseman on this team, you might be able to get the best result out of this group, and then you address whatever else is going on later. Hopefully he can improve his play. Hopefully he can rebound individually next year and beyond and play like a $7.5 million defenseman. But right now it hasn't been there. So give him a chance to still be a positive impact, power play.
And build his own confidence too.
Third pairing minutes.
You don't think he understands when he's out there getting absolutely dummied in the corners, not able to contribute, and it's weighing on him. You see shots of him on the bench, and you can tell, like, he's not in a spot that he's feeling comfortable. This is about building that confidence when it matters into the playoffs. So, yeah, maybe the initial shock of, we're not going to play you as much. We're going to give you less of a role.
But you're still getting power play, man. So, like, make an impact there.
Like that,
you're going to play enough.
100%. So
you're just not going to play 28 minutes, and you're not going to go over the boards every time Connor McDavid goes out.
Great. Like, I'm good with that.
That's fine. That's definitely fine. And I think the formation of a shutdown pairing, taking your two most defensively reliable guys, putting them on the same unit, that's their job. Tough minutes are theirs. Morgan Riley, win your minutes in a less pressure situation, we'll say.
All right. I don't have much else from Leafs. So I want to move to...
Just one more on the Leafs.
Yep,
Zach Aston-Reese, you got to... You're on the bubble, buddy. You can't be not... skating out potential license and seeing the puck go in the back of your net 10 seconds later.
I don't really understand that one either, but
that was brutal. Yeah, and you're lucky Alex Steeves has to play because there's injuries, because that was not a good look for Czar,
buddy. You're right. We've got Haley Salvian on at 8 o'clock. Jeff Merrick will touch on maybe a little bit of Leafs with him, but some big league-wise stuff as well at 7. But let's pivot to the NFL, because we teed this up yesterday. It was a big day in terms of things that could happen, and there were some things that happened. Daniel Jones signed an extension, 4-year, $160 million deal with the Giants. But
it's wild.
It is wild. Lamar Jackson was also franchise tagged, but non-exclusive. So now the saga continues.
What
happens next?
Daniel Jones owes Brian Daboll what?
That's exactly.
Like, what sort
I saw that, I said, that is just Brian Daboll. Just,
what do you think? A truck? What? Like, I'm talking
minimum
like
a truck.
A big portion of this $160 million. I know he might get all of it. Not all of it's guaranteed, but he's getting. He's a rich, 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 rich man because
a
of
rich,
one guy.
Unproven man. So
Brian Daboll.
What a life to live, Daniel Jones.
I've seen this, like, and this is the situation with quarterbacks is so simple. It's way more extreme even than, like, in the NHL. It's like, okay, can you win with your guys on your next stars on entry level? Mm. What a big deal it is when you win with your stars at entry level. Same thing happens in the NFL. Just happened with Jalen Hurts. You can have a great team because you have Jalen Hurts making very little. But once you cross that threshold, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. Like, there's no middle ground. There's no, like, hey, can we accept that we have something in a incomplete quarterback in Daniel Jones, someone who's not going to single-handedly lead us to anything, but we like to have a focus on defense, or we like to put skill position in players in place because we feel like they can complement Jones in this way. You can't do it. You're like, not allowed. You have to pay quarterbacks a ridiculous amount of money, no matter who they are, if they reach a certain tenure in their careers. And frankly, it's like, I mean, it's got to be at least limiting for the New York Giants. Like, how did they get to the point where they overachieved this year? They had a great coach, mm-hmm. and they had sudden influx of talent. And the sudden influx of talent can exist for a little while, but everybody else has got to get paid eventually, and they're going to be far worse sooner than later because Daniel Jones is soaking up so much of the salary cap and so much money, just like any other elite quarterback, which he's not, frankly. He took a step forward, but he's not a guy.
He's seventh highest NFL quarterback
next season.
It's insane,
and he'll drop down because everyone else is going to make that money as mm-hmm. they graduate, new quarterbacks in the system, and there's tons of them that are coming in. But I almost feel like the best way, and this is why the Lamar Jackson thing isn't that crazy, because the best way to operate might be, can we just continue to find quarterbacks that can give us 5 years at a time, 5-year chunks, and just resist the urge to give someone like Daniel Jones that much money and make it really, really difficult to compete? It's crazy that you can't find a middle ground in the NFL, at least it seems, with quarterbacks.
I mean, the Lamar Jackson Ravens stuff, I don't know what you predicted was going to happen, but as soon as they announced the non-exclusive franchise tag, multiple teams came out and said that they weren't pursuing him.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked. Atlanta,
the Falcons specifically.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lock for the Falcons. They come out, they say they're not interested. The Raiders say they're not interested. The Panthers say they're not interested. The Dolphins say they're not interested. The Commanders say they're not interested.
The Dolphins would be so fun. But
all of them, like, publicly saying, nah, we're good. And so there's so many question marks around this. I don't know if it's because he's representing himself and maybe it's a little bit more difficult to do that and to find out about Lamar Jackson, like how this is going to work, because there's a lot unknown about him. But
so just to explain what happened, the non-exclusive franchise tag means that, okay, we've signed you to a franchise tag, mm-hmm. but you can go
it's like
over
being
the
RFA you with the offer sheet kind of, right?
It would be not that the actual tag isn't, but the situation mm-hmm. is that
where that's what I mean.
So he has like a little, you know, he's they basically did paperwork, puts him out there as a free agent,
yeah.
but gives them a chance to match, which would be a restricted free agent in the NHL. So you're available to negotiate. You can do whatever you want to do. You can go see if there's a better deal out there. And by signing him to that tag, two first round picks is compensation. So Baltimore has set themselves up to either get Lamar back, I guess, or get two first round picks if he signs elsewhere. I feel like they're gambling. I feel like there's a decent chance he returns to the Ravens now, that he doesn't get what he wants out there. And he has to tuck his tail between his legs and just take whatever's out there, of course, because you're not going to come back to Baltimore on this non-exclusive franchise tag. Like, you're going to try to get your money now, but with all those teams dropping out, maybe no one wants to give Lamar what he actually wants, which is all this guaranteed money. And Baltimore is just going to let another team do the dirty work for them.
Exactly.
Do the negotiation for them. And they'll be like, no, we'll keep him for the the $40 million or whatever it's going to be. To keep him around and not have those two first round picks. It just feels like they were never going to come to the same side on guaranteed money.
Well, clearly they spent a whole offseason and season trying to figure it out, and they
exactly.
didn't.
Exactly. And Baltimore's gambling that no one's going to do that, because maybe they all talk and they're like, we don't give out these percentages of guaranteed money, whatever. No team acts this way.
Thanks to the Browns and Lamar Jackson. I mean,
Deshaun Watson.
Without that, maybe we see something different. But everyone, I think, is...
And if without that, why wouldn't the Browns go get Lamar Jackson? Anyway, it seems like this is setting up for potentially Lamar to return, which feels, your favorite word, a little untenable. But it feels like the Ravens have kind of... They're a step ahead, which shouldn't be all that surprising, given that Lamar Jackson is choosing to do this by himself mm-hmm. without representation.
It's kind of the consequences of your own actions.
This could blow up in his face. And blow up in his face in relative terms. He's going to make a ton of money, just not, you know, everything up front and everything guaranteed like the way he wants it.
No, man, this is going to be intriguing. And I don't think there's going to be a rush to it. If teams are already saying, I'm taking my name out of the hat, I'm going to watch this play out. Like,
I can't believe...
When's the domino going to fall?
I cannot believe, though, there wouldn't be one team. And you crossed out some that I expected to act that way.
What other teams can actually fit this into their payroll, though? Like,
I guess that's key. That is key.
Because how many other teams are out there with so much to offer that the Ravens aren't able to just automatically sign, like, okay, we'll take that deal as well? Like, I thought it was the Falcons. Like, I thought that they were the only team, and there's... maybe one more that had the space, but it just, to me, I thought, oh, there you go. It's perfect. You walk right into it. You have the cap space.
And it comes down to the quarterback thing, where it's like so much more beneficial as a team to have a quarterback earning rookie salaries or the entry level type of salary, where you can actually build a team. If you take Lamar, you can't do anything else. Have what you have. And maybe Lamar is good enough to take what you have and put that over the top. But unless you're like, I don't know, what team is completely tearing down and just grabbing draft picks? Maybe Seattle, like something like that, where it's like, okay, you have so much draft equity that you can have all these impact players right away to support a Lamar Jackson. But if you haven't been acting in a tank way, if you haven't been the Arizona Coyotes of the NFL right now, you can't really put Lamar Jackson in a situation to succeed if you're going to give him all the money that he wants.
Well, when you want a fully guaranteed deal and somebody just had that same situation happen that isn't aging well, I think that there's no doubt that teams and franchises and owners are like, let's pump the brakes here. You don't have an agent. He's been a little bit of injury concerns, like not so much the red flag.
He hasn't completed the last two seasons.
Only played 12 games each in the last 2 years. I think there's just a lot of question marks around what Lamar Jackson you're going to get. So I'm not surprised, but I was surprised to see so many people immediately pull out and say, no,
we'll
just watch from the sidelines. So
and it could work out beautiful for Baltimore, but how bitter is this guy going to be if it does end up working that way, where Baltimore gets what it wants the entire time?
Could be untenable.
Perfect.
Could be untenable.
Perfect use of untenable.
There we go. All right, let's take a break, because on the other side of the A-list, we're going to do our Canadian female sports icon starting lineup draft. And then we got a full day of guests. We got Jeff Merrick at 7. We've got Monica McNutt from ESPN, who's covering tonight's Raptors-Clippers game in the ESPN International Women's Day broadcast. And Haley Salavian joins us at 8. Of course, always send in your wake and rake picks so you can pick from Raptors-Clippers. Not the Clappers. The Raptors and the Clippers. And the WBC starts today, baby. My team already lost a game, so late in the evening. Overnight, I'm down one. It's a tough start.
The Dutch got you.
It's a tough one for me.
The Netherlands.
All right, send in some picks.
Powerhouse.
A-list on the other side.
Sports. Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, it's International Women's Day, and there's a lot of great Canadian athletes from this fine country that represent us, the Olympics and beyond. And we're going to draft our top Canadian female athletes living for your starting lineup, Justin.
Just to clarify, living?
They must be alive just for this time around.
Okay, we didn't leave enough time for this.
It's all
we
got to
be kind of quick here.
It's okay.
Okay, so kick things off.
Well, obviously, as the woman on the show, I get to go first. And you said, what? Well, it's the way I get to make the rules today. Marie-Philippe Poulin, first overall selection. Not even a question. Not even a hesitation in my brain did I think I wasn't going to draft my bestie, Marie-Philippe
Poulin. Your bestie.
To captain Eilish's roster of Canadian icons. And so, done deal. Let's move on. You don't even need it. She's the GOAT. Do I need to say more?
Okay, because I couldn't get MPP, I'm going to go a pretty specific route. I'm going the future. And the future of the Canadian women's national team on the hockey side is Sarah Filliere. So I will go with the next MPP, Sarah Filliere, the one that's going to be scoring the big goals for the next 15 years, because MPP's just done that. She might continue to do that. We expect it probably, but I'll pick the next best in terms of on the come up, Sarah Filliere next for me.
Did you only pick hockey players?
No.
Okay, just checking. Because how did you not take Christine Sinclair next?
Because I just laid it out. I'm going
the
futures.
The GOATs to the GOATs here. I'm going legendary, iconic, in the moment. We're going to kick ass.
It's going to be here versus now.
And it's Christine Sinclair for me.
Here versus later.
You know, the leadership level of this team is already off the charts.
Okay, you got a good start here.
I got an absolute dynamo of people that know how to lead a team to success. So
you got a good squad. So
Christine Sinclair, not like I'm just stealing this.
Okay, I'm gonna take Brooke Henderson. Brooke Henderson.
I
knew you were gonna pick her next, so I had to grab her. She's the greatest golfer this country has ever produced.
That's right.
And I can just leave it at that, and she'll continue to win. I don't know. Like I'm doing it. Like it's like future.
Yeah, you can construct your team as much as you like.
It doesn't matter. Here, now, later, then. Brooke Henderson dominates. She's on my squad.
All right. I might get a little youth in my roster now because I want to compete for a little longer than one or two seasons here. So I'm taking Leyla Fernandez.
Okay.
I have high hopes, and I think she's got a bright future. She seems like a wonderful girl as well. She's leading this young wave of Canadian tennis stars. I think she's going to have a breakthrough in this year or the next season. So I'd like to capture her for my team. She can be mentored by two of the greatest leaders, myself and just kidding, two of the greatest iconic female athletes this country's produced. So I'd like to bring Leyla in on the roster and have her blossom under our mentorship.
Outstanding pick. I'm going to go with Summer McIntosh. I thought that's where you're going when you say you were going
really
young.
I was really close to it.
14 years old in Tokyo. She's going to be the star of the pool at the 2024 Olympics for Canada and really for any country. She's going to dominate. She's going to be 17 at that time, I believe. Bedard of the pool. I need Summer McIntosh. Need her on my squad if I'm going to be thinking about future success across sport.
Kia Nurse.
Okay.
Not only is she already a basketball icon, she seems like a fun gal to hang out with. If the WNBA is going to make an impact right here in Toronto, you know she's a part of that. I'm going to steal her from the three letters, too. Bring her over. All right? I want Kia Nurse on the squad.
I scratched her off the list
because
for
of
that reason.
No way, man.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'll go with a family member of hers, Sarah Nurse. Get her on the squad. Second hockey player for me. Record-breaking Olympic performance just recently. I don't know how you could go wrong with Sarah Nurse.
Okay, so this is my final pick.
Yep.
I'm filling out the roster in terms of sports here, so I'm going Penny Oleksiak. So I've got hockey, soccer, tennis, basketball, and swimming. She's the most decorated Canadian athlete of all time, and she's still competing.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good pick.
And she's Toronto located, so easy for meetups, easy for, you know, meet and greets. We'll get the squad going. We're going to have a nice fan base here in Toronto. It's Penny. She's already one of the greatest of all time. Put her on my roster.
Okay. I need a soccer player. I'm going Kadisha Buchanan. She's from Brampton. She plays for Chelsea. She's got a lot of connections to my world. She's also probably the best player on the team right now. She doesn't get the same accolades that a Sinclair or the goal scorers get playing fullback for Canada, but she's one of the best players in the world. She's from Brampton. She's on my squad.
I do think there's room for one more, but that's a full roster. I'd like a player coach.
Okay.
Haley Wickenheiser.
Are you just claiming Haley?
I'm giving you an opportunity for a player coach too. Haley Wickenheiser.
Player coach. You put me on the spot here. Player coach. Legendary Canadian athlete.
I'll give you Tessa Virtue. I'll give you Katrina Lemay-Doan.
Tessa Virtue.
There you go. Free advice. All right. Hell of a roster. I'd love to see them go head to head. We're going to take a break because we got Jeff Merrick on the other side. We're going to break down trades that maybe didn't happen, or it's time to move on from the trade deadline. Maybe we'll ask them one question, but Leafs Devils. That was the big topic last night. What's up with Ryan O'Reilly and Tavares on the other side of the break?